Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we have a very special treat in store for you today. We're going to talk to one of the preeminent specialists in preventive medicine in the United States. And actually, he's been a previous guest at various times on Health Talk, my radio broadcast on WOR Radio. Today, he's joining us for the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. He's got a great new book, and he's going to tell you all about it. The book is entitled, great title, Disease Proof, The Remarkable Truth About What Makes Us Well. And he is Dr. David Katz. He has a lot of initials after his name. He's an MD. He's also got a MPH, Master's in Public Health, and he's a board-certified specialist in preventive medicine. He is the founding director of Yale University's Yale Griffin Prevention Research Center, and also there is a unique integrative medicine center up in Darby, Connecticut. It's at the Griffin Hospital, so he is sort of bestriding the worlds of academic and conventional medicine and integrative medicine, which is very important because we need good, well-qualified physicians exploring this area. And he's also editor-in-chief of a journal entitled Childhood Obesity. That's a big problem these days. We'll talk about that. He has published more than 150 scientific papers, and he's written in medical textbooks. He's also authored or co-authored 15 books. He's received numerous awards. He was named one of the 100 most influential people in health and fitness. And also, one of your claims to fame, David, is that, I don't know how old you are, but you look like you're about 40 years old, and somehow you've managed to, how many kids do you have? You have a big family.
Well, Ron, thanks for the kind intro. I've been enjoying this interview so far. Yeah, I have five kids.
Five kids?
Five kids, yeah.
Okay, so that just on the side, you've raised five kids. And by the way, the book is written together with Stacy Colino, who is an excellent health writer, and the book is readable and handy, and I've got the reviews in front of me. It's applauded far and wide. One of the reviews says, Dr. Katz is just what the doctor ordered for your entire family. So we're going to delve into the book. So what got you writing this?
Well, Ron, thanks so much for having me on. Really, it's a pleasure. I think really the same thing that goaded me into preventive medicine in the first place. And I trained in internal medicine. I was taking care of really sick people. And I'm just sort of naturally inclined to the big picture. And I couldn't help but appreciate that, you know, roughly 8 out of 10 hospital beds were filled by horribly sick people who were on the brink of losing years from their lives and had already lost a lot of life from their years. And none of this needed to happen because so much of this was preventable disease. So I, after training in internal medicine, went on to train in preventive medicine so I could do something about that. And disease proof, you know, writing a book is a lot of work. The timing has to be right. You need the stars and planets to align, and they did. And this is really what my whole career is about, but potentially through the book I can reach a lot more people. And, you know, of course, you know, you'd have to talk for hours and hours to cover everything you can cover in a book. So it's, you know, it's all there, accessible to everybody. And I basically don't want to see another day, week, month, year go by with the knowledge to slash our lifetime risk of all chronic disease by 80% and the failure to use that knowledge as the power it could be. I use it. I'm a beneficiary of it. My family is, to the extent possible. I try to make sure my patients are. But really, all of us could be. All of our families could be. And the book is an attempt to make it so, to put that power into people's hands in a way that is actionable.
Well, if I could sum up your book in one word, and by the way, the subtitle of the book is The Skills You Need to Slash Your Risk of Heart Disease, Cancer, Diabetes, and More by 80%. But if I could sum up your book with just one word, I would use the word, which you wield frequently in the book. The word is epigenetics. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So, you know, here we are more than a decade into the dawn of the genomic age. And, you know, that era was ushered in with very high hopes that we would not only unravel the mysteries of the genome, but we would find therein the single genetic causes of important chronic diseases, and we would know how to throw the off switch and make heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, dementia go away. Well, you know, none of that has panned out quite as we hoped. We're learning a lot about the genome, but for the most part, the serious chronic diseases that encumber our lives and that take such a huge toll in modern society are polygenic. There are multiple genes involved. There is no single off switch. But fortunately, just as we're getting disappointed that knowledge of the genome isn't powered to change our fate by tinkering with our genes, we have sort of blundered into a fuller realization of the power of epigenetics, which is the capacity to change what our genes do. And what we've come to appreciate, and I think we're learning more and more about this, you know, with each new publication on the topic, is that DNA absolutely isn't destiny. There are very rare instances where specific genes cause a condition. Much more commonly, genes influence risk for various things, and what we do changes the behavior of our very genes. We can nurture nature. So what we point out in Disease Proof is a whole batch of studies demonstrate that when you use lifestyle as medicine, you eat optimally, you exercise, you don't smoke, get good sleep, manage your stress, you do a short list of high-priority things right, gene expression changes. And studies have shown, for example, that cancer promoter genes are down-regulated with lifestyle interventions. Cancer suppressor genes are upregulated. The power of lifestyle is such that we can refashion our fate at the very level of our genes. So, you know, to put epigenetics into the vernacular, DNA isn't destiny. To a far greater extent, dinner is destiny, because dinner and you know, the way you eat and the way you live can alter the behavior of your genes.
I like the way that you encapsulate that with that great aphorism, dinner is your destiny. Clearly there's a few low-tech interventions that we can perform that will really revolutionize the fate of many Americans and perhaps save our healthcare system from careening off the edge. You know, what's your take on what's happening? And I don't want you to take sides politically.
Politically, yeah.
But you can see that you know, regardless of whether we get a fix from the insurance companies or a fix from the government, things are not going well with our. They weren't going well when private insurance companies were ruling the roost, and yet you know, one has concerns over the direction that healthcare will take once the government gets involved. Is that the answer, to simply provide more high-tech healthcare to, of course, the millions of Americans who are uninsured, provide them with, yes, preventive medicine? But unfortunately, you know, as you know, you're a specialist in preventive medicine. Preventive medicine sometimes boils down to do more mammograms, do more PSAs, check more people for cholesterol and high blood pressure, and put them on appropriate medications.
Yeah, so, you know, Ron, I think you can actually wade right into the topic of healthcare reform and dodge the political firestorm altogether by acknowledging that, you know, frankly, the whole thing is about disease care reform. And the fuss about money, which is really what gets people impassioned, is moot, because the CDC is projecting that should current trends persist, and we're well on our way toward this already, by the middle of this century, 1 in 3 Americans will be diabetic. I mean, that's just a stunning statistic. 27 million of us are diabetic now. You know, that's less than 1 in 10. 1 in 3 is over 100 million people. If we can't pay the bills now, and we're struggling to do that, and it doesn't matter, you know, who the insurer is, whether it's the government or private companies, well, how on earth are we going to pay the bill when 100 million of us have a chronic, costly, potentially disabling disease beginning at every younger age? And the answer, quite simply, is we can't. And frankly, you know, although I signed up as a doc for a health-related mission, I think I find myself on the front lines of nothing less than homeland security. I think the fate of the nation hangs in the balance.
I appreciate what you're saying there, because I sometimes say this, and it's not hyperbole. This is a national security issue.
No question. So, you know, the only way to deal with this economically is to put out the fire, is to actually reform health. But here's the transformational message of Disease Proof. No doctor can reform your health. Doctors can treat disease, as you say. You know, often when we talk about prevention, we're looking for trouble. We do cancer screening tests, but, you know, cancer screening test is about finding a disease early. It's not about preventing it outright. Lifestyle really is the only medicine that outright prevents bad stuff from ever getting started. The closest we come in conventional medicine is immunization. But lifestyle is not something doctors can impose on you or practice for you. You know, no doctor's going to eat for you or exercise for you. The power resides with each of us as individuals. And the problem is, we know that. We know that from study after study after study spanning decades. But while people, I think, know what? I think everybody's heard that smoking's bad and vegetables are good. I don't think that will shock anybody. What people don't know is how. And that's what Disease Proof is intended to fix, because I do know how. And it's not because I'm a terrific guy. Whether or not I am is irrelevant. I'm an expert in health. I know how to be healthy. And, you know, pilots know how to fly planes. That doesn't make them better people. It makes them pilots. Well, I'm an expert in getting to health every day, no matter what's in the way. I have a skill set. It can be shared. Disease Proof shares it. And this is health care reform, because you can care for your health and nobody else really can. And you know, frankly, if enough of us do this, well, it totally changes the landscape, because instead of 100 million of us being diabetic, we also know that we could slash rates of diabetes by 90%. So instead of going up from 27 million to 100 million, we could go down from 27 million to less than 5. And I mean, that's the power that we have been letting languish for years. It's time to fix that.
And it sounds simple, you know, just make the resolve to be healthier, but you actually recognize the pitfalls involved in there, because you talk about motivation, and you provide people with self-assessment tools to kind of find out where they are on the spectrum of motivation to get healthy. You know, we're all kind of, each and every one of us, no matter how hardcore we are, we're sometimes ambivalent about taking the steps to optimize our health. So you talk about, you know, doing a self-check to see if you're ready to take that step towards taking control of your own health.
Right, and there are really two key issues there, Ron. You know, the first is there's a whole science for assessing and adjusting motivation called motivational interviewing. It's a domain within the science of behavior modification. And what we did in Disease Proof is say, look, if the power of caring for health and reforming health and owning health resides with you rather than some healthcare professional, well, then, you know, the power to engage in assessment of motivation and raising it, well, that should also reside with you. So we sort of took this professional domain and translated it so you can use it for yourself. But there's a more important issue, and that is, you know, frankly, most people want to be healthy, and most people who are heavy would like to be thin. So, you know, we spent a certain portion of the book dealing with the issue of motivation, willpower. But then we said, you know, and this is, I think, a common recognition, anybody who's tried to do a hard thing, I care, I want it, but it was just too hard. I couldn't stay the course. You know, it got the best of me. And that's where we devote the bulk of the book, to addressing the issue of skill power. Because, you know, the thing about expertise is it makes even a hard job, well, first it makes it possible, but it then makes it relatively easy. You know, you watch somebody who's a virtuoso at anything. You know, you watch a gymnast. I mean, they do stuff that the rest of us just couldn't do, and they make it look easy. And you ask them, and they say, yeah, that was relatively easy for me because I've been training. I know how. I can do this. Again, you know, you look at the controls in the plane. I mean, they're incredibly intimidating, but pilots sit down very comfortably. They're chatting away. They push a few knobs, and you're airborne, you know, because they know how. So, you know, if you have expertise, a hard job suddenly is a lot less hard. It may even be easy. And then you're leaning a lot less on willpower. If you want to do something and it's hard every minute, you know, I've got to give up the foods I love. I've got to exercise even though I hate sweat and spandex. You know, I mean, if it's just onerous, you know, how long can your willpower hold out? I don't care how motivated you are. You know, eventually you just get fed up. But if you've got skill power, well, then it's not so hard. Now you know ways to do it that make it a lot easier, a lot more comfortable. You fit it in the way an expert would, and you don't need to lean quite so hard on willpower. I think when you combine the two, it totally changes the game, and that's what's afoot in Disease Proof. We do address, you know, raising, maximizing your motivation and addressing willpower, but I think really the missing piece for most people is skill power.
And I, in some ways, I think what you're saying is, you know, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice.
And yet it's not, you know, it's not that big a job, and you know, we can illustrate it. You know, I mean, we actually, in terms of fitness, we recognize people have crazy hectic schedules. It's hard to fit fitness in. We provide a whole menu, including exercise programs that allow you to do brief bursts of exercise in 5 minutes at a time throughout the day while you're in your office. I mean, if you never have a chance to get to the gym, you can still get 30 minutes of physical activity every day, and we direct people to programs that are freely available that allow for that, and you know, we show people all the different ways you can customize. You can take substantial control over your daily food intake just by traveling with a snack pack. You know, instead of when you get hungry relying on some nincompoop who stocks a vending machine, no offense to vending machine stockers, but, you know, I mean, who should be in charge of your choices when you get hungry? It should be you. Well, it's so easy to address that. And then there's some that are a little more elaborate. We talk in the book at length about taste bud rehab. And
that's a good term.
Thanks. And it's a great demonstration, Ron, of the difference between willpower and skill power. So I like to talk about it. So, you know, one of the common problems with diet is that, you know, people tend to have a sweet tooth. We eat too much sugar. It's bad for us. Everybody's heard that. But, you know, it's hard to fix because you love your sweets. And so you think, gee, I eat too much sugar. I should give up dessert. I really don't want to, but I have enough willpower. I'm going to do it. Well, but then you're giving up something you love, and every minute of it's hard, and you're thinking, gee, I missed that dessert, and gee, I really want that dessert, and gee, I can't stand it another minute, and the next thing you know, you dive back into that dessert and eat twice as much. That's the willpower approach, and, you know, honestly, I don't care how motivated you are, eventually, you run out of steam to give up something you really love or do something you really hate. Well, the skill power approach is totally different, and we lay this out in detail in Disease Proof. We point out that there is stealth sugar hidden throughout the food supply in places you never thought of as sweet. There is more sugar in some pasta sauces than in ice cream topping. There is sugar in almost every condiment. There's sugar added to crackers. There's sugar in salad dressing. There's sugar in bread. There's sugar in pretzels and chips, for crying out loud. Well, you know, nobody cares about trading up pretzels to sugar-free pretzels or, you know, swapping out a pasta sauce with added sugar for a pasta sauce that tastes just as good and costs about the same that doesn't have all the added sugar. So we point out to people all these opportunities. Well, you know, frankly, just making these trade-ups, you've taken gram after gram after gram of sugar and all those calories out of your daily diet. Even if you just stopped there, Ron, you'd be much better off, of course. But you don't stop there, because the other thing you've done is you've taken taste buds that were bathing in sugar all day long and put them through rehab. Now they're exposed to much less sugar. They wake up out of their coma. They're much more sensitive to sugar. And that dessert that seemed like, you know, the last thing on earth you were willing to give up suddenly starts tasting too sweet to you. And now you actually want to give it up. But you don't give it up. You trade it up. You actually pick a dessert that has half the sugar, and you like it twice as much. And so, you know, you can do this with salt, and you can do this with preference for processed foods in general and sort of wean yourself off chemicals. And you can go one step at a time. So, you know, again, willpower says give up stuff you love, do stuff you hate, and try to hang in there.
Right.
That's unpleasant. Skill power says no. You know, use the skills an expert would use, get there without all that heavy lifting, make it much less onerous in the first place.
So, David, you know, one of the things that I find really nice about Disease Proof is its reasonableness and its accessibility, because there are many books out there that have very lurid claims like eat like a caveman, eschew all modern foods, and everything will be fine. It'll cure all your diseases. You'll lose scads of weight, and you'll extend your longevity, or put yourself into ketosis. Don't eat any carbohydrates whatsoever, and fuel your body exclusively on saturated fat, and that's the key to longevity. Your book is more about incrementalism. It's very accessible, and it's something that people can use with your public health background. I think you're interested in trying to bring people into the big tent. Is that correct?
Well, that's certainly true, Ron, and I think there's several other important issues here. First, nobody really can eat like a caveman because, you know, when's the last time you saw a mammoth? So, you know, a lot of these things imply benefits from doing things that are just impractical, if not impossible. But, you know, the other thing is, if any one of these theories about, you know, the way to lose weight or be healthy was right, then de facto every other one would have to be wrong. You know, it's kind of like religion. I mean, if you know the absolute one way that the Almighty needs to be, everybody else who has a slightly different vision has to be wrong. So, you know, I think there's a real problem with that. I've argued for separation of church and plate. You know, I think, you know, there isn't any...
Well, you really are handy with the aphorisms.
You really got
it nailed down.
Yeah. So, you know, we're far too dogmatic about, and mostly this is people, you know, trying to sell something, frankly. So, you know, a magical promise, just eat this, just don't eat that, just, you know, just do this one thing, just exercise this way. So, you know, some of the recommendations are extreme and impractical. A lot of them involve magical thinking and false promises. And I think one of the important reality checks here is ask yourself, is this something you would do with your family? You know, if you've got a 5-year-old or a 15-year-old or an 80-year-old parent, would you do this with them? Would you do this while pregnant or breastfeeding? Because if the answer to any of those is no, well, you know, maybe it's about losing weight fast, but it's not about finding health. Because if it were about finding health, you would want to pay it forward to the people you love. You would absolutely want to share it with the baby that's growing inside you or is drinking your milk. You'd want to share it with your children and your parents. And so, you know, there's just something fundamentally wrong about these radical, unsustainable, unshareable approaches. And I think the motivation behind all of that is, you know, frankly, most of these people, you know, are trying to break through. And the prevailing method of getting your book on a bestseller list or, you know, getting people's attention is to say, hey, everybody's been wrong about what to do, and I'm right. You know, I'm the renegade genius who's figured it out. Well, you know, the simple reality is we know the what. You know, the what populates places like blue zones. Blue zones are places around the world where people have the longest and most vital lives. And, you know, they eat a mostly plant-based diet. They get routine exercise. For the most part, they don't smoke. They sleep pretty well. They have good social connections. And, you know, the stress in their lives is either at a low level or well-managed. You know, and that's pretty much it. I mean, the formula is clear, and some of them eat Mediterranean diets, and some eat vegan diets, and some eat Asian-style diets. So there's room for variation on the theme, but the theme is clear. Rather than, you know, trying to get radical and be an iconoclast and invent some brand new what, my approach is to say, look at the science. The what is very clear. The problem is people don't know how. And that's what we need to change. And, you know, learning how to not just lose weight but find health empowers you to do practical things, empowers you to take incremental steps, empowers you to adopt a particular variant on the theme of living well that suits you best, and it encourages you to pay it forward. Absolutely share this with everybody you love for two reasons. One, why wouldn't you? I mean, if you can help disease-proof the people you love most in the world, why wouldn't you? But two, and this is left out of almost all these other, you know, some of which are cockamamie approaches, in unity, there is strength. You know, everybody you share healthy living practices with makes you better at it. And I say this as a husband and a father of 5 children. You know, I've shared it with my family. It makes me stronger. My wife's commitment to eating well makes my own commitment much easier. We are enjoying together, you know, a love of both good food and good health. It's something we share. We you know, something that eat, our interest in it enables the other. And our
in a way, you could say that healthy behavior is contagious. And actually,
yeah,
there's been some studies that show that there's it has almost an epidemic-like quality. Is it
exactly
your social network reflects onto what you're doing?
It's a happy epidemic, exactly. And then, you know, as parents, if you are, you know, infected with good health,
right?
You know, your kids tend to catch it. And
yes.
So our 5 kids have caught it, too. Exactly. So, you know, again, I think the basic problem is it's a seller's market for quick fixes, for radical concepts. You know, I mean, if you want to be on the morning shows, you've got to offer some brand new quick fix scheme. I mean, you know, if you're telling people, you know, vegetables really are good for them, you know, it may be that the mainstream TV shows don't want to talk to you, but in fact, vegetables are still good for us. And the issue that really has not been adequately addressed is, yeah, but what do I do about it? You know, I live in the real world. You know, I can't just suddenly start, you know, being a foodie elite purist. I've got kids. They like what they like. Tell me how to get there from here. And in Disease Proof, we do exactly that. And it's incremental, and it's manageable, and it's sustainable, and it's for real people living in the real world. And, yes, I'd like everybody to get caught up in this epidemic.
Well, you know, you're not just an author and a blogger and a doctor in preventive medicine. You also are an innovator. You came up with something that could really revolutionize the food industry, which is something called the Nouval system. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, the final chapter in Disease Proof Ron is about what I call the levy. And, you know, essentially I say, you know, we
not Levy's Jewish rye bread. That's the levy as in like
as in L-E-V-E-E, right,
like,
a bunch of sandbags.
But broke down in New Orleans.
Yeah, right. That's right. The one with
Hurricane
sandbags.
Sandy.
So, you know, the idea is that, you know, we face a flood of factors that conspire against our health. Highly processed, hyper-palatable, energy-dense, nutrient-dilute foods, labor-saving technology, hectic schedules. And if you want to contain that flood of factors, that obesogenic flood, you need something like a levy to turn the tide, and you can get there one sandbag at a time. So that chapter really describes my career. Essentially, running Yale's Prevention Research Center, what we do is we develop ideas about, you know, what do people living in the real world need to empower them so they can take responsibility for their health. You know, the Spider-Man movies gave us the adage, with great power comes great responsibility. The public health corollary to that is if we want people to take responsibility, we have to make sure they're empowered. So over the last two decades, we've developed a whole array of empowering programs, tested them, published the results, and then try to make them get traction in real-world settings. And one example is Nouval. We developed, and we was a team of international scientists who worked with me and with support from my staff in the lab. We worked for 2 years. We developed something called the Overall Nutritional Quality Index algorithm, and it's a complex formula that takes about 30 nutrient properties, weights each of them for the specific health effects we see when we study them, and generates a summative score, 1 to 100. The higher the number, the more nutritious the food. Originally, I tried to give the system to the FDA, but they weren't ready to run with it. So a company was formed called Nouval that is putting this in supermarkets around the country. Right now, about 1,700 supermarkets have Nouval scores in front of almost all their foods. So it's reaching about 30 million people. And we obviously couldn't put 100,000 Nouval scores in the book. There are about 100,000 Nouval scores, but we did put about 1,000 scores. And what we use the system in the book to show is look at the incredible opportunity to trade up in a category. You know, if you want to eat chips, it's all well and good that spinach is good for you, but, you know, it isn't necessarily addressing the urge. Well, how about better chips? You know, that does address the urge. You can trade up your chips, have less salt, avoid added sugar, avoid unhealthy oils, have more fiber, have the nutrients in whole grains, and have a chip, you know, that doesn't cost you more, tastes really good, but it's a food you can love that loves you back, and you can do that in every category. So, you know, Nouval has scored about 100,000 foods. The sampling we provide in the book is enough to show people the opportunity, and then we say if you shop in a store that's got Nouval, great, use it. If not, here are the other ways to get there from here. So we empower every reader so that they can trade up. We've actually studied, using Nouval and other programs we've developed, the difference in price between more and less nutritious foods. We address this in the book as well. Turns out it's urban legend that you always have to spend more money for more nutritious food. The real problem, Ron, is that most people can't identify the more nutritious food in the first place, and in many instances are actually spending more money for less nutritious food that's just dressed up as if it were more nutritious. Low-fat peanut butter is less nutritious than regular.
Yeah.
Many multi-grain breads aren't made from whole grains, so they look very fancy, and they charge you a premium, but they're actually not more nutritious either. So we again, skill power can fix all of that, too. So Nouval is just one of the many examples of the programs my lab has worked to develop over the years, and I think we should change the world and make it easier to eat well, be active, and be healthy. But my family and your family can't afford to keep on waiting on the world to change, and so in the meantime, you know, the skill set in Disease Proof can help you take matters into your own hands.
Indeed. And waiting on the world to change, I think that's a song lyric.
John, credit to John Mayer for that.
Okay. So let's turn briefly to exercise. You know, when it comes to exercise, your suggestions are also incremental. It's sort of like the 80-20 principle is if you do 80% of the work or if you do if you reach 80% of your goal, it's going to really make huge difference for you.
Yeah, right. So, you know, the argument is, you know, that you really get a huge amount of benefit from, you know, just getting the fundamentals right. And, you know, with exercise, we tend to be too rigid and dogmatic about it as well. you know, any motion is exercise. And, you know, again, you don't have to deal with spandex or necessarily even with sweat. You know, it's frankly, it's great to be really active. And one of the things we point out in the book is that we have a native animal vitality. I mean, we tend to do this, oh, woe is me bit when we talk about exercise. But, you know, come on. We really need to get over that because, you know, you see somebody in a wheelchair, and I think all of us have that native human reaction to think, oh, that's too bad. And yet those of us with, you know, perfectly serviceable legs go through every day without using them for anything. Actually, you know, we can count steps using pedometers if we want, but, you know, I recommend we count our blessings, that, you know, if we're able to locomote and do the things that healthy bodies can do. So, you know, first of all, it's not a chore to be active. It's actually something your body wants and craves, and it feels good. If you get used to not doing it, then you have to ease your way back in. And then it's important to know all motion is good motion. You know, if you like to play a sport or a game, do that. If you like to romp with your kids or your dogs, do that. That counts. If you like to be outside and bike and hike or swim or row or whatever it is, do that. If you like to use exercise equipment indoors, great, do that. If you want to do Zumba or Pilates or, you know, any particular approach, great. If you just like to put on your favorite music and dance, that counts too. If you want to do it all at one time, that's fine. If you want to break it up into increments throughout the day, that also works. So, yes, you know, with the right skill set and the awareness of all the different ways to get there from here, you can customize an approach to exercise so that everybody can fit fitness in. And then, you know, the other element here, Ron, is that, you know, with the book, the focus is on empowering the reader to do these things. We're also working in my lab, you know, to populate settings with programs that make it easier. So we have a free physical activity program for schools, and we're working to implement that all around the country. We have a physical activity program that work sites can implement, and we're working to disseminate that as well. So, you know, it's not an either or. You know, the book says, look, here's the skill set of somebody who is expert at getting your health. You can own the skill set. You can use it today. But let's also work on changing the world so that getting to health, instead of being the road our culture doesn't take, is on a path of lesser resistance. And one of the beautiful things, you know, about using skill power to get to health and doing it in a sensible way is that when enough of us do that, it will change the world. You know, I mean, if all of us know what more nutritious food is, we stop being fooled by marketing hype, we know that some food that pretends to be more nutritious actually is less. I mean, if all of us have that skill power, well, we're going to express it at the cash register. And when enough of us do that, the manufacturer is going to say, hey, there's been a significant shift in the stuff people are buying. We've got to make better stuff. We've got to stop making the junk because they're not buying it. And similarly, you know, if a lot of people start putting fitness bouts into their daily work routine and they're more productive because, frankly, you tend to be, employers are going to start noticing that and thinking, well, we ought to institutionalize this. So we can start changing our own health and the health of the people we love. The net effect of enough of us doing that is we will change the world as well.
You know, I'm tempted to ask, this is a little off topic for your book, Disease Proof, but I think it's relevant. In the news this week, it was announced that the guidelines for prescribing statins are going to be changed. And this means that an additional 30 or 40 million more Americans will be eligible for statin drugs, something which is thought to be one aspect of preventive medicine in America. You being an expert in the field of preventive medicine, what's your take on that development?
Yeah, well, you know, to be honest, I'm an internist. I prescribe drugs. I think statins are very effective drugs, and the evidence is clear that they save lives, but they save the lives of people who need statin drugs. That's the problem. You know, the reason that we're recommending more people take statin drugs is we have a society where obesity is rampant, hyperlipidemia is rampant, the typical American diet is a disaster, exercise, you know, is negligible nationally. You know, we're victims of prevailing bad use of our feet and our forks. And yes, you know, drugs can compensate for that, but what a shame to use drugs or surgery to fix what better use of feet and forks could have fixed much better. And, you know, so again, statins are good drugs, but there is no drug that can slash your lifetime risk of all chronic disease, heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, dementia, by 80%. And we know that lifestyle can do that.
I think there was a recent study that illustrated that there was lifestyle intervention was pitted against drug therapy for prediabetes and for cardiovascular risk, and it was found to be more effective than drug therapy.
Well, much more effective. One of the seminal studies on that very specific topic around was the Diabetes Prevention Program, a $174 million clinical trial run out of the NIH.
We actually just discussed that with folks from the YMCA, where they're actually implementing that on a local level, the YDPP.
Yeah, there's been a lot of effort to translate the DPP into real-world settings. That's been the challenge. But in any event, in that trial, one group got usual care, one group got a diabetes drug called metformin. It's quite a good drug, actually. And then one group got lifestyle. And these were people at high risk of diabetes. And the drug worked quite well. It prevented diabetes in 1 out of 3. So it was a 30% reduction in
the development of
diabetes. Pretty good. But the lifestyle intervention prevented diabetes 58% of the time. It was twice as good. So, statins are good drugs. But the tragedy is so many of us need them. I mean, we shouldn't need them. We don't need to need them. So I don't object to using drugs when drugs are needed. But we should all be saying, gee, how come so many of us need to take prescription medications to fix what lifestyle could fix better? Let's own this ourselves. Let's get to the origins of this. Let's build health instead of fixing disease. It's much better. It's less costly. We don't want our kids on statins. Well, we could share healthy eating with them, fix our own problem, and immunize them against being the next generation to need more statins. It's symptomatic of a society that medicalizes health. But really, health isn't something that happens with prescriptions and hospitals and clinics. Health is much more about the things we control in our daily lives. I'd like to see it addressed there. It's just better.
You're all about communication. In some ways, we have parallel orientations because we're both all about getting the word out in a variety of ways. You have some excellent platforms. You're also a correspondent for ABC News. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, these days I'm available to them and field questions and do occasional interviews, but I worked for Good Morning America for about 2.5 years as an on-air contributor. These things, one sort of tends to lead to another. I got involved with local TV. I was spotted there. There was some interest from the national networks, and I've done some work with NBC as well. And these days, my TV appearances are occasional. Dr. Oz is a friend. I'm on his show from time
yes,
to time.
Yes, I've noticed.
I do various other things. But for the most part now, I reach audiences with online writing.
Through the Huffington Post. You have a regular column there.
Yeah, the Huffington Post is sort of where it began, but I also blog for U.S. News and World Report, and I'm an influencer for LinkedIn. LinkedIn established this long blog platform and invited 150 thought leaders to join initially, and I was privileged to be one of those.
Oh, great.
The list included Arianna Huffington and Richard Branson and Barack Obama, and I'm not quite sure how I got on the bus, but there I was.
You're up there with the president.
Yeah, pretty amazing. I don't know who thought that, but somebody did.
You're not a cabinet appointee, though.
Right. No. So I missed both the privilege and the liabilities that would come along with that.
Right.
The nice thing about that is, it's an outlet to say what you want to say, when you want to say it, when it's timely, and it doesn't involve getting up at 3:30 in the morning, which I had to do to get Times Square and be on Good Morning America.
Right.
So I loved it. It was a lot of fun, and I like doing TV. But these days a lot of my outreach is through writing. It also lets you convey a fuller message. You go on a
yes. I found TV frustrating because it's all about soundbite journalism, and
yeah,
you go on in a long form. When you write, many paragraphs, it's very thoughtful and nuanced, and it's a whole different thing. So I agree.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, you get on national TV and they tell we told you to prep for a segment that was, 3 minutes and 10 seconds. It turns out we've only got 2 minutes and 18 seconds. Go. Well, okay. You can do that, but it's hard to convey a complete message.
Right. So where can people follow you then? In addition to, getting the excellent book, Disease Proof, you've got a website as well.
I do. DavidKatzMD.com. And it's a portal, really, to everything I'm involved in. So you'll find a link to my lab and a link to my nonprofit foundation, Turn the Tide. You'll find my books. You'll find a link to my various blogs. So good one-stop shopping there. You can just kind of browse around there. And, you know, if you just Google my name, you'll pull up a lot of stuff, too, including the blogs that I write. I'm pretty prolific.
You are indeed. I have to say, you are just churning it out. And with the five kids and the practice and all the things you do, you are a bundle of energy. I mean, you certainly have a lot of personal mojo.
Well, thank you. And you know, frankly, I think that's representative of what it means when you disease-proof yourself. I've had patients tell me I'm too busy to exercise. My answer has always been, really, I'm too busy not to.
And incidentally, so tell us, you know, would a busy guy like you, I mean, you have every excuse in the world to just, you know, eschew exercise completely because, you know, you're traveling around to medical conferences, you have a medical practice, you have a family, and you churn out enormous amounts of information, continually writing books and so on. What is your exercise program?
Well, you know, again, I'm too busy not to exercise because I find it's vitalizing. It gives me energy. It keeps me focused. It maintains my enthusiasm, all that. So I've got equipment at home. I have an elliptical and a roller. And my standard routine every day is 40 minutes on the elliptical and 5K on the roller. So that, you know, together that's an hour.
5K, 5 kilometers.
5 kilometers on the roller, yeah. So that's an hour. And, you know, every muscle in my body. Yeah.
Right.
It's an hour.
But it's good.
You know,
I think it's good thinking time because it clears your head, and maybe during the time you may formulate some thoughts for a blog
Exactly. In fact, sometimes for me, Ron, the frustration is that I get so deep into an idea of something I want to write.
Right.
I'm yelling to my wife, "You know, come down with a notepad." And but yes, it clears my head. I mean, just it. My day is always better when I exercise. I almost never miss it. And then I have three dogs. When I can romp with them outside, I do. I have a horse. My recreational pastime is being an equestrian primarily.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've got an exercise routine, but then I've also got physically active stuff I love to do that I do whenever I can in addition. And that's the other thing. You know, we tend to think, okay, I can tick off the I exercise today box, I'm done. Well, no.
Right.
You know, again, you can exercise and then still also just enjoy motion throughout the rest of your day too. And I try to do that every day.
Well, you're a prolific guy, and you're a great role model, and you're one of the good guys leading a healthcare revolution in America. So I feel you're a kindred spirit, and you lay it out beautifully in this book, Disease Proof, which I recommend to everyone. And I wish we could get a copy of this into the hands of every single health professional in the United States. That would be great.
Well, amen to that, and thanks for helping. You're spreading the word. So I don't know if it'll accomplish that, Ron, but it's a step in the right direction. I appreciate it.
Well, absolutely. We're absolutely about getting the word out. Thank you very much, Dr. David Katz. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.